June 30th marks the two-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc. And if you've enjoyed listening to Issues Etc., please consider making a special anniversary contribution. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make a special anniversary gift by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support. Welcome back. It's Tuesday afternoon, June the 29th. I am fascinated by this topic. Always have been, even more so now that certain pending family connections for us will make us, at least by marriage, a military family with a real potential of this not just being theory, but actually being practice. Just war. It's always fascinated me. It has a long and storied history in Christian thought. But nowadays, many believe that it is a contradiction in terms, or that it is a practical impossibility. Joining us to talk about just war, Dr. J. Darrell Charles. He's director and senior fellow of the Bryan Institute for Critical Thought and Practice, based in Dayton, Tennessee. He's co-author of the new book, War, Peace, and Christianity, Questions and Answers from a Just War Perspective. Dr. Charles, welcome back to Issues Etc.
You're well, it's good to be with you. Every couple of years, Jeff Schwartz and I cross. It's like returning home for me, in a sense.
Well, the book is absolutely fascinating, but I think there are all sorts of hurdles type of questions that need to be answered before people entertain the notion of just war. A lot of people would say nowadays it's a elegant theory, but it is practically impossible. It's a good theory, impossible to practice. Your thoughts?
Let me begin with a question. Would you say the same thing of the criminal justice system? Probably many people in our listening audience would say yes. You and I certainly would. And part of my interest, not only in the just war tradition, but in broader issues of justice, issues out of the years I spent doing criminal justice research on Capitol Hill. And the question that you pose me is a very important one. If we, and I'm going to assume that that you and your listeners are really from the standpoint of serious Christian faith, are asking that question. You know, should we give up because our theory doesn't always perfect? Should we give up on our efforts to work for justice simply because there are problems in the system? And I would say, as a teacher and as a theorist, theory has its place. Now, theory is not the end all, is it? You and I will want our students to be able to put it into practice. But those people who are activists, who are supremely practical, perhaps shortchange the importance of theory. My time doing criminal justice reminded me that even though our attempts at working for justice in the present life are imperfect and approximate, they're not perfect, we still don't give up working for justice, do we? There are travesties of justice. There are miscarriages of justice all around us, in your community, in mine. And as soon as we wax either non-participatory or cynical and say, well, because of the problems, we simply can't attain justice as it's meant to be experienced, it seems to me then we basically cashed in and opted out and are waiting for the eschaton. But that, it seems to me, is not responsible occupation. So let me go back to your question. I'm kind of being circuitous here, but for a purpose. Properly answered, is it simply a pretext? That's the charge very often. Or I heard you ask, is just war a contradiction? Properly understood, no, Todd, although the cynical side of us may say yes. And here I'm going to presuppose the difference, Todd, between force and violence. This is something that's certainly not unique to my co-author and me, but John Courtney Murray, two generations removed, whose perhaps best known work, We Hold These Truths, develops this. For Murray, force is that which, let me reverse that. For Murray, violence is that which uproots and destroys the foundations of civil society, law, and politics. But for him, force is that authority applied, which is necessary to uphold those entities. So he's making the distinction between force and violence, and I don't think that's merely straining of gnats. It is to underscore, though, that there's a proper motivation to the application of authority. Historically and ideologically, the just war position, Todd, understands itself as a mediating position between two, shall we say, absolutist poles, the one pole being militarism, the other pole being pacifism. And of course, there are secular as well as religious versions of militarism. But on the one end, you have no attempts to justify morally the application of force or going to war. On the other end of that spectrum is an absolutist attitude toward force that argues force, coercive force, or war could never ever be used for just purposes. The just war tradition, though, is realist, I guess you could say. That is to say, it's willing to work in the messy middle. And it understands that while coercive force is permitted, it must be severely justified and qualified.
Does just war theory have its roots entirely in Christian thought? Or does it in some sense have a precursor, perhaps only historically, in thought outside the Christian pale?
Yes, a great question. Well, let me say that it certainly is refined and expressed quintessentially in the Christian moral tradition, but it does have pre-Christian, non-Christian precursors, and that's simply because of the fact of general revelation. Here, I would resort to an explanation that understands general revelation working through the natural law, that is to say, natural moral law, what St. Paul called the law written on the heart, by which it's understood that all people, Jew and Gentile, Islamic, Hindu, Christian, atheist, Confucian, intuit at the most rudimentary level basic justice and injustice, good and evil. Thomas Aquinas refined and made very explicit that particular point, that all human beings intuit that they are to do good at the most basic level and they are to avoid evil. And out of that, do good and avoid evil, all other, shall we say, commandments or moral stipulations flow. So it's not something, just war thinking is not something that's solely reserved for the Christian. However, in the Christian tradition that spans now almost two millennia, Todd, we find that mode of moral reasoning is developed and refined, and often in response to great tragic injustices, inquisitions, crusading, and what have you. So it has been very often in response to the abuses of force in the Western cultural tradition that the just war tradition has arisen and refines and continues to refine itself today.
So I know that this is different depending on where you place in a sense, where you kind of lower the microphone in history. But what, in a nutshell, summarizes the criteria that comprise just war theory?
Mm-hmm. Well, historically, there have been two sets of criteria. Your readers are probably, and your listeners are probably familiar with them. The jus ad bellum, a criteria, that is to say, justice in going to war, Latin for ad bellum, going to war. Those are three primary criteria right there: just cause, proper or legitimate authority, and right intention. And then the second major group of criteria, what would be called in the Latin jus in bello, that is justice in carrying out or executing war, would be two primary criteria. Those are proportionality and discrimination, or what you often hear referred to as non-combatant immunity. So those five constitute the primary or the core moral criteria of the just war tradition. But then you have secondary criteria, such as last resort, very often at a popular level and in op-ed pieces, and in use by pundits, you'll hear of last resort. Very often, discussions for will begin with this secondary criterion, last resort, or declaration of war, or reasonable chance for success. Those would be examples of secondary criteria. And the reason my author and I, and we're in line with mainstream just war voices in this regard, the reason they're considered secondary is that they inhere in the criteria. That is to say, one can't really deliberate over last resort until you've wrestled with just cause, if that makes sense.
When we come back, I want to take up just cause because it seems to be perhaps the element of just war theory that is least well understood. I don't even know if I actually have a handle on it because I imagine many people thinking about just war theory think, well, look, we're faced with the prospect of war and then we're already in an emergency situation. It's not a time to stand and deliberate about whether or not the cause is just. Maybe the cause is imposed upon us and we have to decide how it can be just in the course of responding. This is, yeah, I mean, if we read our history, very few people actually sit down before the prospect of war is on the horizon and say, what would be a just cause? So when does just cause simply become justification for, false justification for? And of course, the response will be from those who would reject just war theory entirely and war entirely. Well, look, one man's just cause is another man's unjust cause. Our call-in number on this Tuesday afternoon, June the 29th, as we talk about just war with Dr. J. Darrell Charles, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Email us. We'll get your email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Dr. J. Darrell Charles is director and senior fellow at the Bryan Institute for Critical Thought and Practice, based in Dayton, Tennessee. His latest book, War, Peace, and Christianity, Questions and Answers from a Just War Perspective. Something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder. Ride on the peace train. Come on the peace train. It's peace train.
Check out the new Issues Etc. YouTube video, A Cloud of Witnesses.
What went for Mary, the angel speaks in her ear and changes who she is precisely what happens to every Christian. The Lord speaks and he changes you.
James is a great example to us of sober-minded churchmanship.
The cross looms over all of John's ministry. It's about the cross, the Lamb of God.
We see in Nicholas his love of Jesus Christ acting out in mercy for his neighbors. And we see a role model there that we can imitate.
The church, when she sets the day aside to remember St. Elizabeth, is remembering this shining light of benevolent charity and humility.
It's not a popular position, you know, to stand for true doctrine, and yet that's what Ambrose does.
You can watch A Cloud of Witnesses, our new YouTube video, under the support page at issuesetc.org. Historic, authentic Christian radio. Issues, etc.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, etc.
The graying of abortion advocacy in America.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
If asked to choose, Americans today are far more eager to label themselves pro-life than even a few years ago. Pregnancy resource centers now outnumber abortion businesses, and abortion providers are an aging group. According to a National Abortion Federation study from 2002, two-thirds are over age 50. In the wake of the murder of late-term abortionist George Tiller last year, the Senate couldn't even pass a resolution condemning violence against abortion providers. Clearly, support for abortion politics is declining in America, especially among younger Americans.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
Come, you masters of war. Yeah, that build the big guns. Yeah, that build the death planes.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about just war. Dr. J. Darrell Charles is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Charles, let's talk about just cause first. That seems to be the biggest obstacle in convincing people that there can be such a thing as a just war theory.
Well, I would probably answer that negatively and positively, and I would begin to look at what is not just cause for the person who theoretically is worried, and practically who is worried that it's impossible. It's impossible for us ever to arrive at justice. And I'm going to presuppose what I said in an earlier statement, that our attempts, Todd, at justice are always approximate. They're never perfect. That's true in terms of crafting domestic policy. It's true of how our law enforcement officers and agencies work. It's true of foreign policy, too. So all our attempts are approximate in that regard. The question of what is not just cause, what is just cause, is a helpful one to raise, simply because just war thinkers, Christian moral thinkers through the ages have wrestled with the criteria, what satisfies and what does not satisfy. I'm thinking, as you raise the question, of two or three people in particular. One would be Grotius. Hugo Grotius is considered the father of natural law. Lived in the early 17th century and crafted his best-known work, The Law of War and Peace, at the time of the 30 Years' War, that is to say, in a period when many of the nations of Europe were decimating themselves for religious reasons. And you would think, based on his experience, that he would come out answering your question. No, there is never any truly just cause. But he argues that there is a place for rectifying injustice and preventing injustice in the first place. And he's writing to many people who presuppose religious belief. What would not be a just cause? Grotius joins Augustine, for example, and Augustine's views are not so systematic as Grotius, who puts them all in one massive volume. You have to tease out Augustine's thinking through his letters as well as the City of God. But in City, Augustine argues that what would constitute unjust cause would be imperial pretensions, and of course, writing in the early 5th century, late 4th and early 5th century, he's very attuned to that. If we here in the West are worried about imperial pretensions, imagine what was going on in Augustine's thinking. So for him, imperial pretensions, expanding borders, those would be unjust. Lust for power, lust for resources, lust for reputation, as well as differences in religion, even conversion. And one of the contributions of early modern just war thinkers who are later, for example, I mentioned Grotius, but two other names about his time are very important. Francisco de Vitoria and Francisco Suarez, Spanish and Portuguese thinkers who were thinking about what in theory would be just an unjust cause as their nations, their empires, were conquering the New World. And taking a very unpopular position, they argued, no, there can be no forced conversions. We may not take their land for religious reasons. We may respond to threats and aggression and attacks, but we simply may not appropriate their land, their property, and we may not, for religious reasons, cause them to convert. So there is this rich, sporadic, however, tradition that runs throughout the last, really, 1,500 years, reminding us of what is not just cause. Thomas Aquinas, on the positive side, though, enunciates several factors that constitute just cause. What might that be? I mentioned Grotius' identification of preventing injustice and rectifying injustice. Aquinas identified these: recovering what was stolen or annexed, punishing or restraining of evil, and protecting the innocent from harm. Now, Todd, those are categories that you would, and your listeners might say, are very, very elastic. But nonetheless, they do guide us in our approximate efforts toward justice and just cause.
What we hear popularly, especially as our nation is engaged in the wars on several fronts, is that the only real just cause for war for any nation would be that emergency of self-defense. How does the theory read on that, and how do you respond?
Right. Well, certainly, yes. Self-defense is uniformly acknowledged by your mainstream voices, but not every manifestation of geopolitical evil in the world will be mere self-interest or direct self-interest and mere restricted self-defense. What about Rwanda? What about Bosnia-Herzegovina? These are geopolitical realms in which the U.S. had very little directly at stake. One could argue, well, yes, they did. But I think that's a stretch. If you're a European, whether you're a Christian or not, if you're a European, these are closer to your backyard. Some of us wonder strongly why the nations of Europe, the relatively free nations of Europe, were not involved more in preventing what went on in Bosnia, Kosovo, Herzegovina. But I have to ask, where were the relatively free nations of the world 15, 16 years ago, when just before, on the eve of the Rwandan massacre? And it's not as if we have no information or intelligence about that as we look back in retrospect, in fact. But nothing was done. And even though we had no national interest, and even though my co-author and I would say, no, it's never right for a nation to be seek to police the world. And certainly that's a real concern on behalf of those who are critical of the just war tradition or are constantly viewing us as imperialists. The fact of the matter is, from a Christian standpoint, to whom much has been given, much will be required. Now, that does not translate into us sticking our noses in every single geopolitical event around the world. But I would argue it does mean that we will need to be involved protecting or defending the relatively innocent. And that's where charity in the service of justice for establishing a just or well-ordered peace, that is the heart of the just war tradition, that philosophy has to be expressed in a very tangible way. And I would ask, where were the nations who could have stopped Rwanda from occurring? And I speak that not as a prophet, but I prophesy there will be more situations like that that fall short of formal war per se, but which will require some version or form of humanitarian intervention, whether it's genocide or outrageous and mass forms of and egregious forms of human rights violations. So while we're not going to be involved in world wars per se, they will be more geographically focused. I would say this, that many policymakers and many politicians and probably the average layperson has been surprised and shocked at how many catastrophes there have been since the end of the Cold War. In the last 20 years, and I would say that most politicians and policymakers were ill-prepared to deal with all the ruptures, the geopolitical ruptures that have occurred in these last 20 years since the end, the formal end of the Cold War. So I see that we're going to need moral resources, we're going to need historically informed resources if we, as relatively free nations, are going to demonstrate neighbor love to those who are in acute need. And again, that doesn't mean that we become the policeman for every and involve ourselves in every hotspot around the world. But I think there is something of stewardship that needs to be emphasized. I say that as a teacher, as a former policy analyst, as a father, as a husband, and as one who wrestles with two citizenships, obviously the heavenly one, and I hear I'm with Augustine, that is supreme. And when there's a conflict, we know where our allegiance is. But the problem in times of social upheaval, regardless of whether it's overtly political, is that we tend to check out, become disengaged, or non-involve ourselves simply because of our cynicism and because we don't see efforts toward justice either coming to fruition or making much of an impact.
Then, with only about 30 seconds before we take another break, begin a response to a very difficult question. Should the church have a role in or input into the decision about just cause and ergo entrance into just war? About 30 seconds to begin your response.
Oh, boy, yeah, that's impossible. Yes and no, Todd. Of course, we should be involved in conversation, in dialogue, as depending on our calling, on our gifts, on what we have available in our placing in various social institutions. But it's not the church and it's not the citizenship that determines just cause, though. It's representative government. It is the legitimate authority, as Thomas Aquinas argued. And those of us who live in democracies or relative democracies in the modern and ultra-modern age period, we tend to think that we need to be doing the policy making. But the issue is not what form of government. It's rather that declaring war or involving ourselves in the affairs of nations, that is a public, that's not a private matter, and therefore citizens can't determine that. Now, we should be involved in conversation and dialogue, but it's representative government that has to make that decision.
Dr. J. Darrell Charles is our guest. We're talking about just war. His new book is called War, Peace, and Christianity, Questions and Answers from Just a Just War Perspective. You can find out more about that book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. June 30th marks the two-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc. And if you've enjoyed listening to Issues Etc., please consider making a special anniversary contribution. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make a special anniversary gift by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. issuesetc.org. Stay connected. issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen on Demand page and click Share This.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Ten more minutes with Dr. J. Darrell Charles on Just War this Tuesday afternoon, June the 29th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Before the break, Dr. Charles, you were talking about how it is representative government in our system that must ultimately decide just cause. I don't want to put you too much on the spot, but we have a long history that is largely, the milestones of American history are largely wars. We tend to look at them as both turning points and transformation points for our culture and for our government. How do you think we've done representatively?
Mm. Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I would go back and say, and I, by the way, come from a Mennonite tradition, and so my heritage is Anabaptist, for which I am extremely grateful. My father served as a conscientious objector and worked in a VA hospital during the Second World War. So I understand and am appreciative of the Anabaptist tradition there, the Radical Reformation tradition, and its understanding of the powers. And one can certainly empathize, given its beginning in the early 16th century. These are people who were persecuted by both Protestants and Catholics, and one can appreciate the context in which their separatism and their call not to be involved and the affairs of the state and certain areas of public domain arose. So I appreciate that in my dad's life, and I appreciate that in the tradition. To your question, and the reason I mentioned my dad was, I would say that the Second World War is perhaps a little clearer, a war that certainly involved us as a nation, even though our entry was later. So just the Second World War alone, even though there were problems with how the war ended, both in the Pacific theater as well as the European, might be troublesome to us. But determining just cause, say in the Second World War, regardless of where you stand on Vietnam or the Korean War or Iraq, I think allows us to make certain determinations. C.S. Lewis is interesting. Served not only and was injured in the First World War, but at the time of the Second World War, was writing and reflecting on war. I'm thinking of his wonderful, the collection of his essays in The Weight of Glory, which many of your readers probably have in their personal libraries. There are two essays in that volume, Why I'm Not a Pacifist and Learning in Wartime, which are really elucidate his thinking about how to understand the issues of the day. And he, along with other Christian thinkers even since, really did believe that there was a point in time at which Europe was going to be different if they did not resist Hitler. One of the theologians on this side of the Atlantic, Reinhold Niebuhr, who was instrumental in Dietrich Bonhoeffer's life, had a lot to say and was prolific in the 1930s and early 40s. And questions that he raised had largely to do with a critique of what he called pietism or quietism, that is to say, an application of the faith which was devotional or primarily inward. And it's interesting, when Dietrich Bonhoeffer returned to the States, he went in 1930, by the way, to study at Union Seminary in New York, and then he came back in 1939 as the clouds were on the horizon, so to speak. And while here in the States, he realized he needed to go back and identify with the confessing church. It was interesting that the role Niebuhr played in Bonhoeffer's thinking was instrumental, and it worked in this way, calling him to eschew mere devotionalism or pietism, and to be sure that his faith was public and was socially engaged. And this is where many people who tend to try to peg Dietrich Bonhoeffer, I think, have difficulty. He didn't really show any predilection toward resistance or toward pacifism growing up. His father was a well-known psychiatrist, and it was the influence of both Karl Barth and Reinhold Niebuhr that influenced him. Of course, Barth is known, among other things, for his role in crafting the Barmen Synod and therefore the confession of the emergent confessing church. So it seems to me that in the context of the Second World War, we see that faith might call one to act and do things that one might not in other ways. And for Bonhoeffer, and let's face it, in his Cost of Discipleship, there's no intimation that he would do what he ended up doing. But in the final, his final work, Letters and Papers from Prison, which obviously were edited by his friend Eberhard Bethke later then, we find some hints of why he ended up acting as he did. And it seems to me that people like Lewis and Bonhoeffer and Reinhold Niebuhr are all on the same page, calling us and challenging us that there comes a point in time when evil must be stared in the face and it must be resisted. Now, not every conflict that comes along will be a world war, but that was one within the lifetime of some of us which calls for a bit of reflection. You know, I'm much more tentative on the wars in which the U.S. has involved itself since then, but I will say I'm not quite so cynical and pessimistic and skeptical as some are when the question which you asked earlier, can one ever in practice arrive at just cause? I mean, there's always going to be a lot of disagreement, but in the end, it's not the church and it's not just private citizens who adjudicate over that. And if the day does arrive in a democracy where private citizens are adjudicating, then we're one step from anarchy if we're not there already.
Two very quick final questions. How does just war theory pertain to the person who has to wear the boots and carry the gun, the soldier, even if in fact he believes that the war in which he is now called to serve his country is not in fact just? About a minute for a response.
Well, it's interesting. Lewis tackled this question as well, too. As a matter of fact, he made it a bit more pointed and focused. What if two believers on either side are staring at one another? What to do there? Now, you and I might say he opted out because he waxed somewhat humorous by saying they would end up on the same side afterward, and they would probably be joking about it. The fact that Augustine believed that you could press war for the wrong reasons, and Grotius with him, and other just war thinkers with them, suggests that just as in criminal justice, just as in domestic policy, law enforcement officers and agents can properly apply force motivated by charity for arriving at approximate justice with the goal of establishing a better peace than existed before. Now, if you're asking me what's going on in the mind of the soldier, and I can't answer that, and I would tell the person who is wrestling with that, then he perhaps shouldn't even consider military service if he is so concerned that there, in theory at least, can never be a just cause, then the military is perhaps not for that person. But it seems to me that at the proximate level, we can work for justice, and those who are called to it and those who enter conflict then can, in fact, carry that out. But here again, I'm showing that I'm presupposing that not all forms of killing, Todd, are the same. Premeditated murder is very different than accidental homicide, for example. And so in the Old Testament, is filled with distinctions between various types of killing. And thou shalt not murder.
About 20 seconds.
Yeah, so thou shalt not kill is really the Sixth Commandment is in the Hebrew better rendered, thou shalt not murder, because different forms of, not all forms of killing are considered immoral in the economy of God or in the performance of the state as it seeks to order justly a society.
Dr. J. Darrell Charles is Director and Senior Fellow for the Bryan Institute for Critical Thought and Practice based in Dayton, Tennessee. He's co-author of the new book, War, Peace, and Christianity, Questions and Answers from a Just War Perspective. Thank you very much for being our guest.
You're very welcome.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our weekly series on the miracles of Jesus. We'll be talking with Dr. Peter Scherer of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, about miracles in Luke's Gospel. Some would say necessary evil, and I think we need to take away from our conversation with Dr. Charles that very ringing point that all we ever achieve, even with the best of motive, cause, and means, is an approximation of justice for ourselves and for our neighbors. But this really does come down to serving one's neighbor in love, doesn't it? It does come down to, even at times, being called and authorized by God in that service to neighbor, be he neighbor, fellow citizen, or neighbor on foreign soil, protection of their life and their well-being. And one might say, why does God permit war? Well, I think the answer to that question is, among sinners, it is inevitable. And yet he can take those many things that cause, that lead to, and that are part and parcel of warfare, and he can, by his great mercy, permit us in this life serving our neighbor this way, to help protect and defend the rights of and the system of justice for ourselves, but more so for our neighbors. Even to the point of laying down our own lives for that neighbor. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.